kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not dead. That says a lot. It's been a rough week.
I've heard you've had a rough week.
It's raining and it's storming and that shit doesn't go well with arthritis. And so I hurt, but I'm alive and we're doing this. While we do it.
We're not alone. Look at you bringing up the segues. So proud of you. You're learning.
Sometimes. I mean, it's only been like 2.5 years, but I have my moments.
Anyway, joining us from Pixelnauts, Alex Golubiowski, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good. That was a really good segue. Thank you very much.
Then he butchered it, and so it just sounds like normal segue now, where we're like, speaking of dicks, because we don't know what to really say.
Yeah, we try. We try. So how are you doing, Alex? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on here. I'm doing pretty good. It's been a heck of a week, so I'm kind of detoxing from launch and all the shenanigans kind of around that. Kind of feels like a weird video game hangover right now, but I'm doing pretty good.
Well, for the people who don't know, you just released the game Lost Orbit Terminal Velocity on Xbox One. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
All right, cool. So you play as Harrison. You're an astronaut stranded in space after your ship gets destroyed. And all you're left with is your jetpack to kind of try and find your way home. So it's an arcade style. We call it a dodge 'em up because it's kind of like a shoot 'em up, but with no guns. So you're kind of going level to level, going really fast, dodging the heck out of stuff, using a lot of different stellar bodies and different things to kind of propel you and move your way forward. And your ultimate goal is just try not to die too much. You're going to die a lot, but your goal is to try not to die.
You are going to die a lot.
You're going to die a lot. Yeah, it's very bloody too. So we make it.
That's so deceptive too, because the game's adorable, and then you die, and then there's just blood splatter all over whatever you hit, and then the next time you start again, and you go by, and you see the remnants of you. And it's kind of like, you didn't tell me this was going to be a horror game.
Yeah, that was kind of our goal. It didn't even really start out that way. We just started taking it to shows years ago, and we had, kind of violent deaths, and people really liked them. So we just kind of kept making them weirder and crazier, and we just really liked the reaction out of people. It was kind of like an itchy and scratchy thing, right, where you're watching this cartoon, but it's pretty violent, and we kind of like that kind of jive to it.
I've had a few times now where I slam into something, but my skeleton pops out of my suit and keeps flying around.
That's my favorite. Yeah, I love when that happens.
My favorite. So we don't tell anyone, but the inside scoop is, or like the internal name for that, we call him Skeletoni.
Skeletoni.
I don't know how it happened, but that's just kind of what his nickname is. But yeah, basically your skin gets left behind and you get to fly around as a skeleton.
Yeah, the first time that happened to me, I was like, did I glitch something? Did I break something? Because I'm still flying around. I could still control things. I'm still boosting because I hadn't let go of the A button because I'm apparently not allowed to let go of the A button in your game.
Never.
You gotta go fast.
Gotta go fast. But yeah, the first time the skeleton popped out, I lost it. I was howling. The humor in this game coming from the violent deaths is just beautiful in my eyes. The very first time that I smashed into a planet and blood went splattering everywhere, I lost it. I was howling my ass off. It was beautiful.
That's awesome. You should have seen our whiteboard when we were making the game. We literally just had a list of different ways you could die in space, and we're just kind of trying to brainstorm different ways we could murder this little guy. It was pretty weird.
So what ways are there to kill him in the game?
There's a lot. So your most obvious way to die is just to hit something. So we have quite a different ways you can die while hitting something. So anywhere from just exploding into nothing and just some mist to kind of breaking your neck or smashing your visor. Sometimes you get stuck in a planet and your little feet stick out. But then we get more specific. There's also lasers. So you can get chopped in half. You get shot by bullets. There's saws that you basically just get obliterated by. And then with the epilogue that we just put out, we added some more ways to die. So there's some pirates and some mines and some different ways to kind of see him get splatted.
Oh, my Lord.
It's traumatizing. Have you beat it yet, Joe?
I have not beat it. I have a really embarrassing story to tell about this game. For the longest time, I thought the game only had 8 levels in it. Because normally in games, when there's multiple solar systems you could travel to, you could kind of like bumper over and it shows you grayed out. And it's like, oh, this is where I'll be eventually. And I couldn't bumper over to anything at the beginning. So I thought it was just 8 levels. I'm like, oh, I guess they're just really big on replayability on this. So I'm taking my time going through the stages, replaying them, rebeating them, trying to get platinums, which are fucking impossible in this game. I swear to God.
Pretty and hard.
It wasn't until earlier this week that I beat the 8th stage finally, and it opened up another solar system, and I felt like the dumbest asshole on the planet.
Wow.
Well, you only got 4 more after that now.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like a genius, and I am proud of the fact that I'm not reviewing this one. Because I'm a moron. Cole, you beat it, though, didn't you?
I did. I beat the original campaign in under 3 hours.
Nice.
Go me. Nice. The achievement unlock said 9% for that one, so I'm pretty proud of it.
Sweet. Oh, wow.
And I did it on accident. Because when I first started playing the game, like the first couple levels, I was like, oh, no, I have got to get in there and get, like, platinum on everything. And then it got really fucking hard. And then my brain flipped from, I do not have to get platinum, I just have to get through this.
So you find them from there, you know, once you beat like the 4 worlds, upgrade yourself a bit.
Yep. So that was the thing. Like I didn't realize how big a difference having all the upgrades would make until after I beat the epilogue and I went back to the earlier levels and I was like, ooh, that's how people got those times. Because otherwise, those times, you just pissing in the wind trying to get the platinum time without the upgrades.
They're pretty intimidating when you first see somebody beat a level in like 20 seconds and it takes you 5 minutes.
Yeah, two of the questions I have written down here are, one, who the hell set those platinum times, and who are the psychos who set the world times?
Probably both me. I'm sorry. I definitely set the platinum times, and I think I set a lot of the world times, but I tried not to do that too much. It's probably other people. I'm not quite sure who else is going that nuts over it.
Every time I play the game, I'm just like going as fast as I can and hoping to God I don't slam into planets. And it never pays off.
The planets are the least of your problems as you get like further into the game.
Oh, yeah. Wait till there's
bullets. I don't know if I should spoil it for him or if just like the bullets weren't even. You know what? Fine, I'm going to spoil it. Because you know what got me the most?
What was it?
Fucking laser doors that close. Like, oh, I'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I got past it. And then I'd die, and I'd be like, it caught my toe. And it was so depressing. And then, like, remember how when I said at the beginning of the game, and I was like, I'm going to get those platinum scores? Well, part of that is not dying a lot. And you got to have a flawless run to get the platinums.
Yeah.
Not on the laser door levels. Never.
They're pretty tough. Never. The epilogue platinums are pretty tough.
Oh. I wanted to cry. With a lot of games, I'm so frustrated just thinking about those fucking laser doors. With a lot of games like this, when you get frustrated like that, like sometimes the best thing to do is put the game down and then like go do something else and come back to it either in a couple hours or in a day or two. You can't do that with Lost Orbit because you lose that muscle memory for it.
It's hard. Yeah. It's definitely like a balance between playing it too much and not enough. Yeah,
you either get super pissed off or you stop and go do something else and then you come back and then you're literally pissed off because you're just hitting every asteroid you come across. Because you forget, like when I had to take a break between playing, I was playing it super late one night And I went to bed and I got up and I started again the next morning. And I was creeping through the levels because I was afraid to boost at all because I felt like I couldn't control it if I was moving fast.
Yeah, it's probably not a good morning game. It's probably a rough way to start your day with all that rage and then get in the car.
Well, I can't drive, so that's all the better. At least safe on that regard. So at least there's that, but...
Cool. Well, we tried making the game, you know, kind of relaxing for people that want to just kind of beat it, but then rage-inducing for people that really want to go fast and get platinums.
Yeah, I'm lucky when I get bronzes on stages anymore. I feel like the warp stage in the introduces those what pink supernovas are they?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I think we call them gas planets, but yeah, they just gas make you go planets. Super fast.
Oh my god! The first time I played that stage, I'm holding the A button because again, I'm not allowed to let go of the A button in this game, and I'm flying through these planets and. It's like breakneck speed, and I can only imagine how it is later in the game where you're trying to go this fast the entire time while dodging everything and still picking up all the collectibles and not dying.
You guys are mad. A is just a like beginner boost. If you hold right trigger, you mega boost and you go three times as fast.
Yeah. See, you have to do the mega boost and then hit the portals to go, you haven't made it to the warp thingies yet.
Oh, yeah, the teleporters.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, those will
be- Yo, there is so much ahead of you. You don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's jumps and there's grind rails. Yeah, you're in for a world of pain.
Oh, Jesus.
The grind rails are super cool, but I struggled at first with, like, jumping between them. I couldn't figure out the timing on that, and then I felt like an idiot when I figured it out and realized what I was doing wrong.
Yeah, we had a bit of trouble trying to make sure that the kind of visuals were there for people to kind of know when the timing is right. So we did lots of play testing and that was kind of the best thing we come up with, but it's kind of tough when you're going super, super fast to try and like that to players. Yeah.
Joe's just sitting over there like, oh my fucking God, what is going to happen when I get that far? Pain.
No time for games saying making Joe feel like such a noob. I really do. I feel like such a moron with this game because I didn't realize there was so much more to the game that was there. I'm like, well, it's only a $10 game. It makes sense that it's not a huge game, but oh my God, it's a massive game. It is a massive game.
I think I was most surprised by how deep the story is in the game.
I think most people are. That was kind of a lot of the takeaways we get from people. And I think even for ourselves, when we first launched it, like we knew we liked the story and we spent some time on it, but it was really meant to be an arcade game. And then people really kind of latched onto that part of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was just kind of nice to hear from people that, you know, that was something that they really enjoyed too.
See, I'm an emotional mess. And when I got to the ending of the original campaign, I was like all teary eyed and shit. It doesn't take much, but that was just enough to get, I was in there going, okay. And then I remember there was an epilogue. I was like, whew.
Now don't go spoiling that for me.
No, I'm not gonna. You're good in that regard. You know, I could say something from chapter 2 and you'd be spoiled right now. So.
Shut up.
I don't get to enjoy this much. I don't usually do better at games like this than Joe. Because they're not typically arthritis friendly. And I kind of struggle with them. But for some reason, I latched onto Lost Orbit. I had a good time with it and was able to play it.
That's awesome. It can be arthritis inducing. There's a lot of stick wiggling and button holding. And I mean, you're just replaying levels a lot. So I get it.
I will say I normally set the sensitivity to any game. If there's a sensitivity slider, I'm sliding that bad boy up to the max every time. Well, just so that I don't have wrist fatigue from having to push on the thumbsticks. Mm-hmm. This was the first time I wish there was a sensitivity to slow it down.
Yeah, we probably cranked it as far as most people are willing to go because we wanted that, you know, that twitchy control. And it takes a little bit to get used to. So I think that kind of alienates some people once in a while, but it's kind of needed once you go really quick.
That might have been part of why I felt like it was more approachable than a lot of other games like this at the same time, though, because I didn't get fatigued playing it. I was able to zoom through it. without being like, oh, well, my hands are tired after two levels. Nice. So,
okay, awesome.
But there were also times where I was like, stop going to the left so easily.
It's very sensitive, yeah. I mean, in space, you know, space, everything matters, right? Little touches and boom, you're dead.
Yeah.
How long did you guys work on getting the controls to feel just right in the game?
Probably, I mean, when we shipped the original game back in 2015, I mean, I think we were tweaking controls pretty close to, you know, the end, just either controls or all the other mechanics that kind of worked with the controls of, you know, where you're getting shot out at and what speeds. So it was definitely something we spent a lot of time on and spent a lot of game testing on, just bringing in lots of people and kind of seeing what they liked and didn't like. Then we tried some really crazy control schemes too, based on some people's feedback, but this is kind of where we thought was the sweet spot for the game.
What kind of crazy control schemes are there? Like, what do you mean by crazy controls?
I guess one of the crazy ones we got is when we were first showing the game to people, they were really thrown off that because the game's kind of like tank controls, right? You're always going forward whichever way that the character's facing. Mm-hmm. And that really threw people off because, I don't know, when you go backwards, the controls are kind of reverse. And the goal is really not to go backwards in the game. But that threw people off. So we tried an analog kind of approach where, you know, whichever direction you point, you go that way, but the game was too slow. We played around with like a lot of physics-y stuff too, to kind of use some of the kind of gravity and things like that from the planets and stuff too, but that didn't really quite work out the way we thought it would. So we kind of settled on this kind of tank and twitchy control that we have now, which again, I think some people get really thrown off by right off the bat, but the people that like the game, I think, enjoy it quite a lot. So we were pretty happy with the choices we made there, but it took a long time.
Yeah, the controls felt perfect to me. It did have a little bit of a learning curve to it, just for how twitchy it can be. But I didn't have any real gripes with the controls. I thought it played well.
Oh, nice. I think the people that usually have gripes with it, they hold up a lot on the controller. Like, they want to kind of push up to... Don't and if you hold up, you're dead. Yeah, you just swerve in and then it's over. So you just got to do little taps left and right, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, my friend is one of those guys that plays holding forward on everything, even games that don't need it. I'm going to embarrass him, but his name's Jacob Garner, and he does some stuff for the show. And he was playing a game called My Horse and Me 2 on the Xbox 360, which has kind of a cult following for being a decently easy gamer score game. But he was playing that, and he was doing terrible at it because he was holding forward while trying to move left and right. And... He was just awful at the game, and I made fun of him, and now the world gets to make fun of him because I shared that story on the show.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's an up pusher. He can't be an up pusher.
So he would do terrible at this game.
You should try it, and then you guys can make fun of him. That sounds pretty great.
Sounds like a plan.
So Harrison has some pretty interesting upgrades in his pocket that he can upgrade over time. Were there any that you left out that you wish you could go back and put back in?
We had a lot of interesting kind of ideas for upgrades and things like that. We had shields, I think, in there too, but then a lot of the things,
you left out shields.
We did. Did you get the bomb though?
It does help. You know what the bomb reminds me of? It's like in Gungeon in Gungeon, when you can use the blanks and it clears a room.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea.
It's a lifesaver. We were
playing a lot of Geometry Wars at the time. I don't know if you guys remember that game from way back when.
Oh, my God. Where's Carnage?
It's just a little shape twin stick shooter. But they had that, too, where you had this like super move that just kind of cleared the map. So that was kind of the idea for that. What else do we have? Yeah, we have the barrel roll. I don't know if we had too many other crazy upgrades for him. We wanted to do a lot of cosmetic stuff at some point, but we kind of ran out of time. Just different like trails and things like that or whatnot, which would have been cool, but we decided to kind of opt against that. And I think that was it. We didn't really plan too much. We had a lot of things in the world that we wanted to do, like different obstacles or things you can use in power-ups. But mm-hmm. I think for the upgrade menu, I think that was pretty much it for the most part. Yeah, just barrel roll, brakes. Nobody really uses brakes, but they're in there.
Yeah. When I unlocked the brakes, the only time I used them, I did it on accident. I forgot that they were there. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I need, I missed, I can't remember the proper name for the gyms, the pink gyms, but I missed one. Yeah, I missed one, and like, I, for some reason, I hit the brake to go back and get it, and I was like, oh, yeah, and then I never used it again.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, some people like it. I think the people that want to play cautiously and kind of slow will use it a lot, but, I don't know. It's not really useful.
Although the calling you granny when you unlock it, though.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah, you guys seem to have fun with the achievements in the game.
We did. We tried using as many references as we possibly could to things we like. So that was one of the things we did. That and the level names are references to like a ton of stuff, too.
What are some of your favorite references that you snuck in the game?
So I didn't, my partner at the company, Chris, he did the story writing. So I didn't do much of the story writing, but I did sneak in the Matrix reference in there for the story. That's probably one of my favorite ones. There's the dodging bullets little line in there, later on in the game. And then for the levels, there's a lot of Lord of the Rings ones that I liked. And then I think for the epilogue, we named one of the planets after the Metroid planet from Metroid. It's probably one of my favorite ones.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who decided on the name of the little robot with you?
Oh, I think I named him Probe, possibly, and then I think Chris named him Atlee, like the actual his like actual name in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good little dude.
I love the dynamics between him and Harrison, because then you never feel like Harrison is truly alone.
Yeah, he's with this weird probe. Alien space probe robot creature that doesn't really understand him, but at least they're kind of friends, and you know, at least he's not alone, right?
But the way they communicate with each other, it gives it a little bit of a sentimental feeling. It's kind of like Portal and the Companion Cube, only the Companion Cube gets to talk back.
Yeah, that was kind of the idea too. Yeah. Had a lot of fun with that one.
Then I kept playing, and I was like, something's going to happen, and it's just going to destroy my little robot, and I'm going to be so sad. I was terrified the whole game.
Oh, boy.
I think people would be sadder if we killed off the companion over the main character, if we did kill either of them. I think people would latch on to that to probe.
Everybody loves companions in games.
They do, right? There's something about that, I don't know, it's just special. And tag along with you.
I think it's because they usually, either they have no faith in you or they have too much faith in you. And so it's like endearing, but obnoxious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I like that.
There you go, Joe. There's this episode's name. Endearing, but obnoxious. Oh, I like that.
That's nice. Okay, I'll write it down.
I think last week I came up with charming but repulsive, so I'm on a roll with those.
It's good. It's good. You guys could have a theme for every podcast. I like it.
It's usually dumb stuff I said during the show.
That's basically what every show title is, just dumb shit that we said during the show at one point or another.
It's cool. That's how we named most of the stuff in the game too. We talk about something stupid and you're like, hey, that's kind of funny.
The best way to brainstorm though.
Yeah
right. I mean, you know, gotta make it a little personal and have some fun with it.
Oh, Joe, man. I interrupted you and you were about to ask a question. I bet you forgot it, didn't you?
I did. I pulled a U.
I could tell when you didn't continue the question. I was like, oh.
Yep, screw that one up.
We're professionals.
Don't you dare use the P word around us.
Yeah,
we are far from it. It's a weird word in this industry. We are as unprofessional as it gets, and I am proud of it.
Oh, yeah, man. It's okay. That's what the industry likes. You can't be too professional. It just gets weird.
We're like, still weird somehow.
Yeah, we are weird. I think we're pretty. What's the weirdest podcast or media appearance that you've done?
Oh, I don't think I've done anything too weird. I'm trying to think.
Us. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. You guys, I think you guys are going to make the list. That's pretty good. Number one.
Is that a good list or a bad list?
Podcasts are usually pretty relaxed, right? So they're all pretty great. And I don't know, they got to be weird. I don't want to do anything. I think if I had a weird one, it would be something super formal. Like if I, oh, actually, no, I do have one. We did an interview at a local AM radio station for the original release of the game. And that was super weird.
AM radio. Oh,
yeah. Shit. Yeah. I don't even know how we got on there. And like, it was a pretty good interview, but it just felt super weird. I'm like, no one listening to this is going to buy this game or be remotely interested in hearing about it. But here we are. So.
Was it like an oldie station or something?
It was like I don't even know what AM does. Just oldies and news and I don't know. I don't even remember. It was just strange.
Nothing's on AM. Like, it's so weird that you did something on AM radio.
Yeah, I think the only time I played AM on is by accident in my car. Like, oh, crap, I hit the
button. 540? What the hell's on 540?
Yeah, or if you're, like, out in the woods and FM is just not working, you're like, well, I guess I'll go to the dark side. So talking on AM. Yeah, that was weird.
That was a little too real. I live in the woods and FM radio don't work up here. We don't get right AM either.
Oh, then you're really deep in there.
Yeah. My neighbors use a CB. What does that tell you?
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Breaker 19. This is SML calling over.
It's all fun and nice games until you're playing a game for review and you can start hearing their conversation coming through your TV. I've had that happen.
Really?
I'll be playing a game and I'll be like, That sounds out of place. Wait a second. I recognize that. Oh, fuck. Because they don't use there's a little modulator thing that they need to, because they're broadcasting at a frequency higher than legal. And so it comes through, like, I'm surprised it's never come through on the show, because it comes through, like, our TVs and our Bluetooth speakers and everything.
Does it ever come out of the, like, PlayStation controller? That'd be really creepy.
Oh, my God.
I mean, PlayStation's not allowed in this house. But my daughter has been on her laptop, and she's been, like, watching YouTube videos, and she'll be like, I heard somebody talking. And I'm like, do I need to get you into a doctor? And then I realized that, no, it's that because she used Bluetooth headphones.
Wow.
So it would come through her headphones that they were having conversations on their CB radio.
Wow. Yeah. That's wild.
That's wild that the Bluetooth headphones picked it up.
Yeah. Yeah, our Bluetooth speakers that we use with our phones and stuff to play music on, it'll pick up their conversations too. The TVs, especially my mother-in-law's TV, is really bad because they've still got one of those big ass tube TVs. Huh. And so, like, they pick up everything. Like, it just comes through in bits and spurts here on us, but over there, it's crazy.
It's crazy. Well, hopefully your neighbors are entertaining, at least.
No, they're horrible drug head assholes.
Oh, no.
I call them dumb and dumber.
That sounds okay. That sounds like it might be all right.
It's endearing, right?
Endearing, no. Right? Yeah.
I love that movie.
Like, charming but repulsive, but without the charming. So it's just repulsive.
And they're endearing but obnoxious, but without the endearing.
Yeah, exactly. They're just repulsive and obnoxious. Like, they're your quintessential dumb rednecks who, like, go out at 2 in the morning shooting an AR-15. Told you I lived in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
It's not a good look.
That's beautiful.
It's almost like being in space. I was trying to bring it back to the game somehow.
That's good. I like that.
That was a good try.
It was a noble effort. 2.5 years of this.
Yeah. Hey, I'm no better, and I've been doing it for 6. So.
Yeah, you've got time over me, so you have no excuse.
I have no excuse. I'm just stupid.
How many levels does the game have, Joe?
Well, there's what, 5 solar systems, like 50 stages, something like that?
Well, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. Including the
epilogue. I think the epilogue has 12, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think overall, I think there's about 50 in the regular level, and then we have about 15 of challenge levels. I don't know if you tried those yet. Those are extra raging. Yeah.
Sad face.
What's the difference between standard stages, the time trials, and the challenges?
Okay, so standard stages are just the story stages. You can play through, get medals and stuff. The time trials are the same stages. We just have like a little countdown for when you start, and there's a meter that shows you how fast you're going through them. So that's for people that just want to get really great times against each other for the leaderboards. And then the challenge levels are, they're kind of themed after each world, but they're brand new stages that we made for this epilogue. And they're basically, in the spirit of each level, but just way harder. So if you thought like the regular levels are hard, these are like five times as hard, maybe more.
My ass will be kicked by them.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like, there's a couple levels that have no checkpoints. You have to make it through in one life. Like, they're pretty good. They're short, but some of them are just like nonstop moving asteroids or smashing asteroids. There's a couple really cool ones with like mining machines that are kind of smashing around.
And those are not cool. That is not cool. Don't lie at him. Those were the points where I had to like just stop.
Yeah, those levels are definitely for the people that have played the game far too long and just want to have something extra crazy to do.
Those are for the top world time people.
Yeah, I don't even know if people are going to compete in times for those. If you just beat them, it's a pretty good accomplishment. They're pretty tough.
Dark Mika says, all I'm hearing is that you're mean creating achievements like that.
Yeah. Well, so there's no achievements for the challenge levels. You don't have to beat those at all. They're just for yourself. Like when we say platinum, they're just like our internal platinums. I don't know if that's we don't do the platinum for all the challenge levels because that's mean.
Well, that's good at least. That would I can only imagine trying to get platinums on those.
I was really relieved to see that there weren't achievements for the. There's one for trying the time trial, but I don't think there's any for beating it.
No challenge.
Just try it. And I was like, I can try it.
So that's taking pity on the gamer.
Important question, though. How do you unlock indie cred mode?
Oh, okay. That's a fun one. So if you go to the main menu, if you go into the graphics settings, there's an indie cred mode you get to put on. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. You got to go check it out. It's really stupid.
Oh, where's my controller? Hold up.
It's very stupid, and that was another one of those things that I absolutely loved.
I was so miffed. I was like, how did I play this whole game and not find this one button?
I think it was the first thing I did in the game.
Well, I went and checked for sensitivity and it didn't. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, it's all good. Yeah, it's just dumb. We our studio is a 3D art studio because that's kind of where we came from in AAA. So a lot of the time, when we were making the original game, a lot of other indies were doing a lot of pixel art, and we just really suck at pixel art. So this was our indie cred mode for trying to be more indie.
I want Cole to find it on the show.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, check it out.
And then do I have to like go try to play the game after I turn it on?
If you just back out of that menu and say yes, then it'll turn on.
Okay. Hold up.
You should see it pretty immediately.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Like I said, it's really stupid. It's actually kind of fun to play with.
That's incredible and also awful.
You should try playing a level with it. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that was rough trying to play a stage like that. That was funny, though.
Oh, my.
Achievement, you had to beat the game with that on. That would have been mean.
You would have had everybody pissed off.
Yeah. Well, actually, for this launch of the game, we had someone that was really mad at us because he accidentally turned on indie cred mode, but he didn't realize what it did because I think he was just playing around with the settings. Oh. And he thought the game just looked shitty, and he was mad that it didn't look like all the trailers that were putting out. And so we had to like break him. I'm like, no, it's a mode, it's a joke. I know it's a stupid joke.
Wow.
So yeah, he was kind of mad, but once we explained it, he's like, oh, okay, I get it.
See, I'm not the only moron with this game. I'm not. It's alone. Our fault.
We could have made the menus better and whatnot. So.
I can only imagine how those fucking laser doors look. I'm not brave. I'm gonna put my controller away.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh no. Oh, that's terrible. See, I have
been a long time since we had someone just play a game during the show.
I actually do it a lot, but I don't say anything.
Oh, look at you.
It's multitasking. Yeah,
I'm pretty sneaky about it.
So what do you think, Cole? Yeah, what?
Well, I do it more like when I'm not feeling good and you already know, or if there's a co-host, like a guest co-host who's going to be talking over me anyway, then I'm just like, that's good. Let's play a game and listen. Every now and then I go,
What's that called in like rap songs? The guy that's like
the hype man.
Like,
Yeah. Used to be the hype
DJ
man.
DJ Khaled.
Yeah. As long as I throw in the occasional dick joke, then it's all good.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I'm here for anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. You hold up your end of the bargain.
I'm here for dick jokes and to actually play the games that Joe gets confused by.
Yes.
That's my banner for this whole show.
I will never hear the end of this one, will I?
Nope.
Son of a bitch. So
remember
anyway.
That time Jacob threw rocks at me?
So anyway, I know the game first released on the PS4 back in 2015. What was the long journey bringing it to Xbox?
I don't know. It was a lot of different stuff, I guess. So we put it on PS4 and Steam initially, and we kind of went on and started doing some contract work after that, because our studio does a lot of contract work with other devs and indies. And eventually we ended up getting... we signed on with Xbox to be able to develop for them. So we're going to just, start working on a new game. But we're like, hey, you know what? We have Lost Orbit. Maybe we just put it on Xbox, see if it does okay on there. And so we started doing that. And then we had the stupid idea of being like, well, if we're going to do it, maybe we should do like way more levels and spend way too much time on it. So that's kind of what we started doing. And then the Switch came out and everybody kind of went nuts over that. So we ended up somehow convincing Nintendo to allow us to develop for them as well. And that took way too much time, and then we had a lot of team changing kind of stuff in between there too internally, so that kind of slowed us down a little bit. And then eventually we're here way too many years later putting out the almost the same game a second time. Feels really strange. Definitely ready to move on to other stuff again, or properly this time, but it feels good. I'm happy to be out on Xbox and Switch and all that. So
you're on all the platforms now.
Yes, well, almost. We're not on Epic or Stadia or Humble or Discord or Greenland or GOG. Vita. There's a couple more, I think, in there. I don't remember.
the Apple Fire Stick. Not Apple, but Amazon. And then Apple has theirs. What's their Apple TV thing?
Yeah, they got the Apple Arcade thing coming out. Yeah, so we have all those, but we're not going to do any of those.
Fuck them, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, way too much work. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll do some Epic exclusives like everybody else. That seems to be going well.
Hey, sign that contract, get that paycheck, man.
Oh man, yeah. If they want to give us money, they could have the game. That is totally okay.
You are for sale. Hey, I would do the same thing if Epic came to us and they're like, hey, we want you to cover a bunch of stuff on our store and only on our store, and you're never using Steam again, and we're going to pay you a lot of money. I would probably sell out, because I don't do the PC reviews anyway, so it doesn't affect me.
Joe would sell out and not even ask my opinion on it.
Just hand you a bag of cash.
Mail me that check. I am ready to shill for whatever you want me to.
Yeah.
The SML podcast brought to you this week by Domino's.
That's awesome.
Oh,
Does Domino's deliver in space?
I hope so.
I don't know.
So.
We should find out.
I have a website where you can watch your pizza being made, so that'd be pretty great.
That would be pretty great.
I don't know. Just ask Elon Musk. I'm sure he'll get it. He'll get it going.
But it has to be delivered by a little dude in a spacesuit like Harrison, who had to like fly around all the asteroids and stuff, or it wouldn't be no fun.
Sweet job. Sweet and terrifying job.
You can make use of the jetpack to keep the pizza warm.
Oh, God.
That's true.
See?
Yeah, it's pretty cold in space, but you can probably hook it up to your jetpack somehow, have a nice little system going.
See? Brilliant.
And you deliver it, and they complain that it's, like, too crispy. Someone will bitch. Someone always bitches.
Pizza's never perfect.
So, Alex, what are you playing now? When you're not working on Lost Orbit, what are you playing and enjoying?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been playing a whole bunch of stuff. I started playing Detroit just, like, a little while ago. We play a lot of Rocket League at work. Much. That's probably why that game took so long to make.
wait, we have to back up. We have to ask the important question. What's your Rocket League level?
Okay, I'm not great. I stopped playing for a bit. So what's the one before Diamond?
Platinum. Have you played since they did the update where like you have an actual like XP level now?
Oh, do you? No, I haven't.
Yeah.
One of our guys, Vince, he plays it like religiously. So last time I talked to him, he was like level 4 Diamond. So I don't know what experience he's at.
Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not. He plays way too much. It's great. yeah, so we play a lot of that at work. What else have I been playing? Oh, man, I just finished something. Well, I played Iconoclasts finally. That was like a super backlog game. And then I've been playing... I've been playing Lost Orbit, I guess, but it's kind of boring now. I'm like 300 hours in. oh man, what was the other game I was just playing? I don't remember. I don't know. Something cool.
It was memorable.
Yeah, the last few weeks I haven't really played much just because of launch and stuff. So I've just been nervously staying awake and not sleeping and not playing games. But I was definitely playing something before that. Yeah, I have no idea. Sorry.
That is fine. So the game has been out a couple of days now. What's the reception been?
Pretty good. We have a bunch of really good reviews. We got our first like perfect review this time around, which is crazy. So people are really digging that side of it. We've had a really good kind of response from the Mixer community on Xbox. We've been getting quite a bit of playthroughs on there from streamers and whatnot. And then everywhere else, I think it's going okay. It's Lost Orbit's like a super niche game, so sales aren't going to be, you know, super crazy for us. We never really expected them to be that way because it's a really weird game to market because you really have to kind of play it to kind of get it. Sales are like okay. I mean, we're not, you know, I'm not retiring anytime soon, but they're doing pretty good. And I mean, especially for, you know, indie devs this time around, there's 5 million games coming out every day, so you can't really expect, you know, people to dish out all their money on your first launch week. Everybody's kind of waiting for sales and kind of seeing reviews and things like that. So but it's been good. I mean, we're pretty happy with everything. We're still waiting on a few outlets to review it that we're kind of hoping to get some reviews from. But other than that, yeah, it's been good. We're doing some shows over the next little bit here in Canada, and I think we're going to try and do PAX and whatnot too. So
yeah, we're looking to doing MAGFest in January.
Where's MAGFest?
DC area.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, okay, I'll look into that. That'd be awesome. Yeah, we're doing EGLX here, and like a little, there's like a little conference that we're doing in the next couple weeks, and then we'll probably do the next couple packs, and we'll kind of go from there.
Have you taken the game to other shows before?
When it first launched, we did. We were part of the Mix at one point. We did PAX a few times. And we've done a few like smaller shows around here too, like Niagara Falls Comic Con and whatnot. So yeah, we've done the route before. This time's a little different just because the re-release and rebranding and kind of stuff of it. So we're kind of excited to kind of see people's take on it. And I don't know, shows are usually really good for us because people get to get the game in their hands and actually kind of understand what it's like as opposed to just seeing screenshots of this tiny little dude out in the middle of nowhere. Kind of hard to get an idea of what the game is. So. Yeah, we really like shows. Yeah.
Any kind of fun stories of people who are like exceptionally good at the game or people who are just absolutely awful?
Like Joe.
Oh yeah.
Like me.
We have awesome stories of showing the game off. I think a couple of my favorite ones is we had a guy, he was playing it years and years ago. And so he's flying around. He seems like he's having okay time, he's going a little slow. And he goes to us, he's like, huh, so it's like two dimensional? And we're like, yeah. He's like, so that seems like a waste of a dimension. And then he just walked away. That was really fun. And we had this one kid, like pretty young kid at PAX. play the game, and all he was doing was just smashing into stuff on purpose. And his mom was there for about 5 minutes just watching him explode into gore. And I explained to her before he got there that the game's kind of violent, and she's like, that's fine, he plays whatever Call of Duty at home, whatever it was at that time. He was like 7. And so he's there, and she, like, a few minutes in, she's watching him, and she's like, well, you're supposed to go around the asteroids and go forward. He's like, no, this is fine. And she had to, like, take him away, because all he was doing was just watching blood explosions and gore. So that was a nice little experience.
Someone after my own heart.
And
then
once in a while, he gets something that picks up and is just great at it, which is really cool too. Not as funny of a story, but, you know, it's pretty awesome as a dev seeing someone pick it up and just get it and just be zipping around as good as us who've played it for way too long. And you're just like, yeah, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. That's awesome.
That's got to be a good feeling to see people just embrace your game and succeed.
Yeah, right? It's always nice, right? And I don't know, when you go to shows and you get people that really don't get the game and whatnot, and sometimes you worry, you're like, oh crap, did I make a lot of bad decisions about this game? And then you get people who come up and are just great at it, and you're like, okay, I get it. I made this game for you guys specifically, and you do exist. It wasn't just my imagination. and it makes you feel good. You're like, okay, there might not be a ton of you, but there is definitely a good crowd of people that will enjoy this. So it's nice. Oh, I have one more story. Someone played the game once, and they played it, and they just looked at us, and they're like, why didn't you make the controls good? And I think we just said, I don't know why. This is just the best we could do. And they left. And we're like, cool, well, that's not our target audience, and that's okay.
Was that before or after, like, you tweaked with the controls?
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Nice. Shows are always this fun mix of people, so it's kind of cool seeing different people try out your game.
Oh man, that's beautiful. Why are the controls not good? Oh man, that's such a dickish thing to ask too.
I know, it's great. I don't know, you just kind of, you don't really take it too personally, because you just kind of get used to it after a while, but it's just kind of hilarious.
Oh,
I would have been in the corner crying.
Yeah. You know, after you see a few of the kind of comments on trailers and whatnot, you just kind of get used to it.
Oh, yeah. YouTube comments are the worst. Oh,
I love it. I love it. People just write trash, more indie trash, way to go PlayStation trash. You know, it's great. But then, you know, you have more people than that saying that, you know, looks awesome, or they think it's pretty interesting. So I don't know. I like the negative comments, because they seem so, I don't know, seem so like on purpose, you know, someone's going out there and just like wanting to crap on these games. I appreciate them.
You're taking the time and effort to crap on your game.
Yeah, about something they don't like, right? You like something, you're going to say you like it. Sure, that's easy. But if you really hate something and you're watching the trailer and you're like, I really have to find something to say about this piece of shit. And I don't know, I appreciate that. It's nice. You know, if I don't like something, I don't take my time to tell people I don't like it or spend more time with it. I just don't, whatever, don't play the game or don't eat it. If it's food or something, it's actually like, you know, if I had a sandwich that was really shitty, and I finished that sandwich just so I could say something really shitty about it, that's a lot of effort. I like that.
And then you have to eat a shitty sandwich, too.
Yeah, it's not great, but, you know, I appreciate the effort.
Really, I've nice. Done that in the past over a review game. I was really, really mad at one, and I hated it. And I actually completed it and got all the achievements out in it just out of spot.
Awesome.
That way nobody could be like, she didn't even play the game. I'd be like, fuck you, I completed it and I still hated it.
Do I want to know what game it was?
Demetrios.
Ah.
Yeah, I hated it so bad that I rage completed it.
I liked that one too. I thought it was funny.
I know, a lot of people did. And I was just like, this is fucking awful.
I like that. I like that you finished it. You got to get the head in there.
I figured I had to do the legwork if I was going to shit on it. I couldn't just be like, well, and that was the thing too, because a lot of other people were giving it good reviews and I did like it. And I was just like, no,
you're all wrong.
I have to have a reason to shit on literally everything and everybody. So here I go. Put on the muck boots and go do the legwork.
That's really great.
Yeah, people in chat. I like Demetrios. Root beer is my jam. Said
I know. I don't even know what that is. I'm gonna have to go check it out after we're done.
It's an adventure game. Humor is not for everyone, but if you like immature humor, you'll probably enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get you. Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Like one of the game over sequences is you getting arrested because you tried getting a photocopy of your ass on a copy machine, but you fell through it. Or was it that you shit on it?
No, you shit on it.
Oh, that's right. You shit on the photocopier and you got arrested and it was game over.
Well, don't shit while you're doing that. You're just leaving evidence. This is bad planning. It's a terrible criminal.
So you know what's up. You know what's up. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while now. Was there anything about the game you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I don't know. Just, I don't know. People want to check it out. That's cool. You know, if you like it, that's awesome. If you don't, you could leave some hate on it, too. We're totally okay with that. I don't know. It's just a really fast arcadey game. It's super, super weird and super niche. So, you know, I urge people to check it out. And I think we're going to try and put out a demo for it too, because it's really hard for people to kind of get it without a demo.
Yeah.
Unless they really kind of understand it from screenshots and things or videos. But yeah, if you like it, check it out. If not, just put on your wish list. Wait till it's like a dollar in a couple of years or something. So most indie games. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and then stay tuned. We're probably going to make another game that's weird and probably niche too, but might be a little better.
Well,
do we have any additional info on that, like a date or something we could look forward to?
For like a next game or something?
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're pretty far out. I just kind of rebuilt my team at the studio recently, so we're kind of just brainstorming and doing some early prototyping, so it'll probably still be a little while.
Can I give you some advice? Whatever your game is, don't have your protagonist shit on a photocopier.
Oh, crap. Okay, I think that's kind of like our main story.
Go ahead and just like wipe that off of your slate and try again.
Okay. That's pretty solid advice. I'll tell the team that tomorrow.
I thought you were going to say release it on Xbox first. That's what I was expecting. That's also
important, but I just wanted to go back on Demetrios again because it makes me feel so mad. Awesome. But then also, yes, your second piece of advice is release it on Xbox first.
Cool.
And PlayStation can suck a dick.
That's funny. No love for the PlayStation, eh?
No.
I own one, but okay. I'm not on good terms with it, so.
See? Yeah. Yeah, we've had a really good launch on Xbox this past week. They've been really supportive, and the community's actually been pretty cool. And like I said, the Mixer community's been really awesome. Mm-hmm. So it's nice seeing people check it out for the first time on Xbox and kind of like it. So
I'm sorry about that. I thought you were done. I leave Mixer open to farm Sparks, which is the currency on there. And it was actually surprising because I was sitting here playing Lost Orbit, and I just have my old computer set in the corner. I call it my Spark Farm. It does its thing on Mixer, and I don't touch it. And I was sitting here playing Lost Orbit, and I looked over, and one of the random streamers that it had come up to host was also playing Lost Orbit. And then my first thought was, wait a second, is the embargo up? And then my second thought was, oh yeah, it's good. Oh, and it's cool she's playing it.
That's awesome.
Because usually,
yeah, we're actually one of the top games on Mixer this week for
That's cool.
It was pretty.
Getting it was weird for indies on Mixer is a little tough, and seeing Lost Orbit be up there was really cool.
Yeah, no, I was very surprised how well it's been doing on there, because yeah, it's kind of a weird game for streaming too. I know Mixer seems pretty heavy on the big games right now. So yeah, I have a picture. We took this picture because it's probably never going to happen again. It was like Apex, Fortnite, like PUBG, and then Lost Orbit on that like little band they have of top games right now.
Nice.
It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
That is really cool.
But check it out on Xbox. Actually right now we haven't, I don't know if we announced it yet properly or have talked about it too much, but Xbox actually has more challenge levels than the other consoles right now. So I think you get the full 15, and then the other ones are coming to Switch and PC and PS4 probably in about a month or so.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we're a little bonus special for the Xbox players.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, Microsoft's been treating us really nicely, so we wanted to give them some exclusive content for a little bit, and we gave them the hardest levels that we've ever made. So enjoy those.
Enjoy. These are going to kick your ass.
Yeah, die a lot. It's good for you. Just go fast. You'll be fine. The game is a lot easier after about a beer too. So if you have like one beer and then just go really fast, you'll do much better.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Although I probably would just get a whole bottle of rum.
Yeah, that works too. That works too. Whatever your jam is, yeah.
I'm not allowed to drink anymore, so I just have to work with tea.
There you go.
Well, tea is great too, yeah.
Spike your tea.
Not allowed. Not allowed. I just have to, like, remember the days I was allowed to have rum.
Live through memories.
Yep.
Oh, man. On the note of rum, Alex, we are going to let you get going. It was a pleasure having you on the show chatting with us. Give us one more sales pitch on the game. Tell us where we could get it, how much it is.
Yeah, sounds good. No, thank you for having me on the show, too. So, yeah, Lost Orbit, Terminal Velocity, super fast, arcadey, dodge 'em up. Is available on Xbox, Switch, PC, and PS4 right now. So check it out. And it's $9.99 US and whatever other currencies off of that. And check it out if you like it. Cool. If not, that's cool too. And thanks for having me on here. It was really great.
It was a pleasure having you on. It was a really fun chat. And thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. You guys have a good night.
You too. And thanks again.
Well, cheers.
Root beer is my jam. Say, get some rum extract. I've actually used rum extract in cakes. I should put it in like other things.
Oh man, that was fun though.
It was fun. It was a good chat.
It was a good chat, and it's a fun game too. Despite the fact that I'm not as far in the game as everyone else, because I am a moron.
You're missing so much. Like in the beginning, you think, wow, this is really hard. And then you get good at it and you die significantly less. And then, like, you go to the next area and you're like, never mind, this is fucking hard.
Yeah, it's definitely getting tough for me. It goes so fast, man. I'm not good with how fast it goes. And I have to constantly slow down. And despite the fact that I'm not allowed to, I let go of the A button every now and then.
You're really going to struggle in some of the later levels because, like, okay, you know how you hit the planets and they speed you up if you just hit that orbit but you don't go into orbit and, like, you fly off and you speed up?
Yeah.
Imagine doing that and then hitting a teleporter that warps you into another thing that will propel you into another thing that actually launches over asteroids.
Oh, my God.
That will then land you in front of, I lost the term I was looking for. What is the thing? The fucking laser doors.
The fucking laser doors.
Like it, as you, oh, the rails that we were talking about. So like you hit the rails and then you actually slide along them and have to jump from rail to rail to rail. It gets crazy and being fast is like the least of your worries. It just becomes a trying to chain shit together and not die.
Yeah. Oh shit, but we still have a lot more show to go.
We do
a lot of news, couple of reviews. Oh man, I don't even know where to start. It feels like it's been so long already, and we're just starting.
But at least we don't have a lot of reviews.
Goddamn email won't open. Oh.
Email, please.
Email, please. Email, pleases. I should have had this open beforehand, but I wasn't thinking about it. So, hooray me. Anyway, some news. The TurboGrafx Mini has been officially unveiled. It is a miniaturized version of the TurboGrafx 16 console that is rumored to run around $100 and will include a whopping 50 TurboGrafx games, 24 of them being American, 26 of them being Japanese. I'm not going to go through all the names, but the American titles include Alien Crush, Bomberman 93, Bonk's Revenge, Newtopia 1 and 2, R-Type, East Book 1 and 2, And then some of the Japanese titles include Bomberman 94, Castlevania, Rondo of Blood, Choaniki, Ghouls and Ghosts, Gradius 1 and 2, Ninja Gaiden, Snatcher. So there's a lot of good stuff on this console.
Ghouls and Ghosts is so good.
It is.
I remember playing the shit out of that. And I was bad, and I think I only made it to like the fourth level. It was sad, but it was so good. And I would sit there and just, like, I didn't even need to go to the next level. I just wanted to kill the little goblin things.
Dark Mika, Bong's Revenge? No, Bonk.
Bonk?
Bonk. Oh, my Lord. That'd be amazing if it was Bong's Revenge.
I'm only surprised that there hasn't been a game called Bong's Revenge. Hold on, wait, where's Sting? Because something tells me there already is one. I still don't know how to use Steam. Steam is hard.
I don't know. But the TurboGrafx Mini is scheduled to release March 19th, 2020, which is one day after my birthday. So hint, hint, people. It will also be an Amazon exclusive, so I hope you like dealing with them. But for $100, 50 games with some of those titles, hell yes, I am interested.
Yeah. I don't know that I would pay that much just to play.
$100 for 50 games?
Well, there's like one I would play, and that's just it. So,
oh, it's snap. No time for games. Just gifted a sub to Doc Havoc. So, drop in subs. I still need to get Norg to do something.
Yes.
I'm hoping he'll be able to record us something for SML 500. His garage was broken into.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They took a bunch of his instruments, his laptop, computer stuff. He got screwed over really bad, but thankfully he has home insurance, so hopefully everything will be taken care of.
I hope so. That's awful.
Yeah, he was lucky they did not take his Chapman stick, which is a music instrument that he uses quite a bit, including with Vince DiCola. He has a show coming up with him. I believe it's going on this weekend. So if you're in the California area, look for Vince DiCola and see if the show is still available or not. I'm not entirely sure. By the time this comes out, it might be over. So I don't know.
That would be sad.
But yeah, hopefully we'll have something for SML 500 from George, because he's been here since day one, so we need him.
George is good people.
George is good people. Greg Russo, one of the writers for the new Mortal Kombat movie, confirmed that the movie will be R-rated and will feature fatalities. So it looks like might finally be getting a movie as violent as the games.
About fucking time.
Yeah.
And I say that as somebody that liked the original Mortal Kombat movie and all of its 90s cheesiness. I want to see like a good, gruesome, just fucking disgusting Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, like if we could have horror movies get as violent as they are, we can have fucking Mortal Kombat spraying blood everywhere too.
Yes.
We deserve it. It is what the people deserve. What's the question?
Do you have any like unusual cast that you would like to see?
Oh God, not really. I don't have anyone in mind.
See, here's what worries me. Is like, we're going to get a cast that's like TikTok stars instead of actual martial artists kicking ass stars. Like, I don't want to see Jake Paul being Johnny Cage.
I don't think they're going to have a problem like that.
And that's the shit that scares me, though.
Oh, my God, Jake Paul.
It would be like, I don't want to see Johnny Cage come out of there as a YouTube star.
What's up, brah? It's your boy Johnny Cage here.
I think I gagged a little just for your boys.
Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Mika says Jake Paul could be Johnny Cage as long as he dies. But that's the problem. Like, if you've played any of the games, Johnny Cage is still kicking for the long haul. And you know that if they're making a movie in 2019, 2020, whenever, that shit's gonna, like, destined to be a trilogy, even if it blows. So, you want them to pick a good cast.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not gonna stick with the canon of the original movie, though. No,
not at all. I'm sure it's going to be its own thing, a complete reboot.
Right. Because everybody pretty much shits on that one as being bad.
No. Yeah.
Which it was in like that so bad it's good kind of 90s way.
Hey, we rewatched the first Mortal Kombat movie during Flag Fest the other weekend. Just a whole room of us watching it. Yeah. Maze Dude knew like.
I missed that.
Maze Dude knew like all the lines to the movie. He's talking along to the whole thing. It was beautiful.
Oh, I'm sad I missed that. That would have been a highlight for me.
Should have made it.
I know.
Oh, well, next time.
Maybe next year. Yeah.
Next time. Let's see. Super Monkey Ball Banana Blitz HD is being released October 29th for Xbox, Switch, and PS4 with a Steam release planned for later in the winter. So looks like Monkey Ball's coming back.
A Steam release until Epic buys it out.
Oh, God.
You know what'll happen?
Are you excited to see Monkey Ball back?
I don't have a nostalgia boner for Monkey Ball. I don't even remember playing it.
Really?
Yeah. But I can see why everybody else is excited. Like, I remember it being a thing, but I don't remember playing it.
Man, you missed out.
Probably. I was the kid that played Mortal Kombat. I didn't play Super Monkey Ball.
Well, to be fair, the first two Monkey Ball games were on the GameCube, and not everyone had a GameCube, so...
I did have a GameCube, though.
And you didn't have the Monkey Ball games? What is your fucking problem?
Mortal Kombat was my problem.
God damn. Root beer is my jam. We need Skies of Arcadia HD. We need Skies of Arcadia HD.
In fact, I had a GameCube as recently as 15 years ago. Like, I had one when number one was a baby, because we actually bought it off of eBay, and because I was on bed rest and I couldn't go anywhere, and so we bought me a GameCube.
Hmm.
And that's when I played Crystal Chronicles and stuff like that. So, and I still didn't. I played things that I wanted to see guts and gore.
No, you missed that with Monkey Ball, I'm telling you. It's good stuff. I'm excited to see us getting a new game. I didn't think Banana Blitz was one of the good ones.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if they're going to rework any of the levels or rework any of the mechanics to make it a better title overall. And they're cutting down. It used to have 50 different mini games on it on the Wii release originally. They're cutting it down to 10. So hopefully they're just getting rid of a lot of fluff and focusing on making a good, solid Monkey Ball release, because we need one.
Are they getting rid of fluff, or will they re-release the others as DLC?
Man, that would suck.
I'm telling you.
But it makes you wonder. Oh, well. Capcom have announced that Resident Evil 5 and 6 will be hitting the Switch on October 29th, so just in time for Halloween.
It seems so weird to think of Resident Evil on the Switch.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I don't know why, but there's just something, like, it seems out of place. Which, didn't they put the original Devil May Cry on there, too?
Mm-hmm.
It just feels so weird for gruesome games to be on current-gen Nintendo.
Well, Nintendo's letting developers do things that Sony's not allowing anymore, so...
That's a good point, because Sony censored ass in Devil May Cry.
Which was stupid. Apparently they reversed that and it's not censored anymore, but...
That reminds me, I forgot to ask the dev a question about Lost Orbit.
What were you going to ask?
I was going to ask why they chose to censor it. Like, it's your game. Put in the cuss words. And they're there, and then they're beeped out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I meant to ask why they chose to do that. Oh, well.
Oh, missed opportunity. Well.
You can email them and ask for me. We can include it in my review.
The first Gears 5 tech test is going on this weekend for everybody who pre-ordered Gears 5, or even better, all Game Pass members.
Very nice. I've actually got to pre-install it because it will play on our laptop.
Will it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that laptop is no joke.
I can tell. Holy shit. But yeah, the tests run from the 19th to the 21st, and another one from the 26th to the 29th. So if you're a Game Pass member or if you pre-ordered Gears 5, get ready to play some Gears 5.
Very nice. No Time did another gift sub.
I was just about to say, big shout out to No Time for Games dropping another gift sub to Dark Mika's on Fire. That is 4 gift subs they've given in the channel, which is way too many. I thank you for your support. It means more than anything except maybe free games. But that's what I'm here to give to you people, because we've already given away 2 free games in chat tonight. There's going to be a couple of more showing up, and No Time's won both of them so far.
We should do a raffle.
We should.
Yeah.
We should.
Buttons are hard, though. Can I do it? You can.
I think you could do it. Yay, it's open.
There.
I'm just playing it by ear. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. last bit of news I have is Xbox Game Pass updates. A couple more games are being added to Game Pass. On the 17th, we got Nightcall on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
On the 18th, we got Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain on console, and then the Banner Saga on console and PC. Then next week on the 25th, we're going to be getting Killer Instinct Definitive Edition on PC and console, Resident Evil 4 on console, and For the King, the picture claims it's on PC only, but the write-up mentioned console as well, so it might be on there as well.
I think it's already on console.
Well, I mean, for Game Pass.
Yeah, but I think it launched.
Oh, that's right. It did launch to Game Pass.
Yeah, it launched into Game Pass on console first, like last month, and now PC's getting it too.
Yeah. I figure it might be something similar to Time Spinner as well, where Time Spinner was only mentioned that it was going to be PC, but the console version was on as well.
Was there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything you want to talk about?
Rocket League Double Experience Weekend.
Shocker that you would bring up Rocket League.
Know what I'm going to be doing? Playing Rocket League. I'm only at level 421.
Oh, Jesus.
So, you know, I got students at like 680.
God damn.
So I got some catching up to do.
I like your level though, 420.
I actually took a screenshot of it when I hit it. I was so tickled. I was like, look at me, I'm a meme.
Oh, Jesus. Now you got to hit 500 so you could take a picture within the next week and show me that you hit level 500 and we could use that for the picture next week.
You say that like it's a joke, but I could very easily do it. To put it in perspective, I actually bought the Rocket Pass, which was new for me. It's the first time I bought the Rocket Pass. But starting at zero on the Rocket Pass, I bought it when I was at tier 99, and I've already got it up to tier 143.
Damn.
Yeah. And so that was just like 2 weeks.
That is insane.
Yeah. I'm so good.
Oh man. So aside from Rocket Pass, Rocket League, any other news you want to talk about?
Nope, that was the only thing I saw today. I was like, oh yeah, I need to mention that tonight.
All right, then should we just jump to reviews?
Let's do it.
Or actually, before we get to that, we have an email to read.
Oh, we gotta draw the when are you gonna draw the winner on the giveaway in the chat? Will. Okay. Will. Whatever. Go.
From John Prudlow, who says, Dear SML Podcast, just wanted to send a quick note thanking you for the awesome reviews and fun podcast show that you provide as a service to us in the gaming community. I've been rocking my SML Podcast shirt every Thursday night when I'm able to make it and tuning in for an entertaining couple hours of gaming news, reviews, and wet pancakes. Looking forward to your milestone 500th episode next week. That is going to rock. Keep up the great work. Thank you, John. You are why we do what we do. Literally.
I have warm fuzzies.
I feel special now. But yeah, should we dive into reviews?
Let's go.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Agalos, developed by Look at My Game, published by P-Cube. What? Are you giggling at Look at My Game?
Yeah.
I know. I love companies that have fun names like that. But released July 12th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Step through time and discover a mesmerizing new action RPG that looks like it was plucked straight out of the 16-bit era, but plays like a modern-day Marvel, bursting with secrets and side quests and boasting slick melee combat that any 2D action game would envy. Agalos is the perfect combination of retro style and modern-day game design. Cole, tell us about it.
So I will give them credit. They're right. This game is really a good combination of retro game and modern game. The controls feel very modern. They were very effective. Normally when we play a retro game like this, I'm ready to cut somebody. They tend to have tanky, bad, blocky controls that are very much like the retro games that you used to play. They didn't do that with Agalos, and it's such a relief. As far as the gameplay goes, this is your standard retro 2D adventure game. You're going to be doing some mild platforming and hacking and slashing monsters. You have the quintessential action hero who is, you know, a little blonde knight with a sword, and there's he's got a quest from a king and a princess, and it's very... it's very standard issue. The story does try to set itself apart from others in the genre, which is hard to do. This is an oversaturated niche, unfortunately. But it does try to set itself apart with the story a little by giving you this plot where, you know, there's a big bad who's collecting all of the elementals from the light world, and you have to stop him before he confuses them with the elementals from the dark world and rip into the realm itself and just wreak all kinds of havoc. So your goal is to stop all that from happening. As you travel around the kingdom, you'll be collecting elements that, you know, your goal is to get to him before the big bad does, but it's Metroidvania style gameplay, so you're not actually in any rush to get anywhere. you just go and hope that you land in a place where you don't already have the shit for it and carry on, so that you have something new to explore. And I say it like that because this is my number one gripe with the game. The actual navigating of the realm is fucking impossible. There are the occasional little signs and where, you know, if you push up beside of it, it'll tell you, oh, if you go up, it's this town. If you go left, it's that town. If you go right, it's that town. It's all well and good, but if you click for the overview map, it's basically just, here's where the towns are, here's your head where you are. And there's no way to, like, plot, oh, if I go left on this screen, if I go down on this screen, it's going to take me where I need to go. It just leaves you to wander around aimlessly and hope that you're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
And my downside is that I have the directional sense of a potato. You could put me in a wet paper bag with a flashlight, a hammer, and a map, and I still wouldn't be able to get myself out of it. And so I spent a whole lot of time in this game going back and forth, like, am I close to where I need to be? No? Okay, never mind. Try it again. Oh, wait, I'm where I was 20 minutes ago and never finding my way.
So directionally challenged people need not apply.
Yeah, maybe not. That said, the other downside usually with these kind of retro games is that they're hard for the sake of being hard. And I bitch about that a lot because you can cut off a large portion of your potential player base by making a game that's just stupid hard like that.
Yeah.
But it also can just, even people who like that can eventually get to a point where you're like, okay, you zap the fun out of it. Agalos is surprisingly forgiving. It does not in any way need to be excessively brutal. It gives you every chance to just go and get through it. You can carry potions. You can buy potions, which can refill your health bar. Although I will say they do limit you. They will let you buy as many potions as there are in the shop, mm-hmm. but it will only let you carry one at a time. So if you buy a small and then buy a large, you lose your small. If you buy a large and then buy the small because you forgot you already had the large, you're going to lose your large.
Oh, no.
That's horrible. That shit shouldn't happen. But it does. It does fuck you over as far as that goes. However, you have your health potions, but you also can get an herb. The herb, you can only carry one of at a time, and when it's gone, it's gone. Until you go buy another one. Occasionally, you can luck out and get one to drop from an enemy, but I think in like the whole 10 hours I played the game, it happened once. The herbs, you cannot, it's a passive thing. It just sits there, and when your health bar dips too low and you die, the herb automatically uses itself and all your health fills back up.
That's good.
So if it's been a while between saves, if you're not paying exactly a whole lot of attention to your health, which I'm really guilty of, you find yourself in a bad position. You're not sure how you're going to get out of it, and you're going to die before you can get to a safe point. That herb is there to help you and so that you don't fuck yourself over and lose all your progress. As you navigate through the four different temples, you will get an elemental power that's related to the temples that you're in. Then you can use that to go back, of course, because it is Metroidvania, you can use that to go back to access different areas that you couldn't get to before. Mm-hmm. Which is nice. It's just that it plays very stereotypical our action adventure Metroidvania. And even though the story tries to pull it out of that, it still was very much an experience where you're like, it's not overwhelmingly, it's not bad in any way. And it's got some interesting quirks to it, but it just doesn't stand out in a flooded niche.
Yeah.
I had fun with it, but it wasn't something where I was like, oh, I have to go see what happens next. I have to go. It was just more like, okay, well, but I have to finish it for review. And that's kind of sad. Like, I wanted to be more invested in the story and the characters, but it's just not there.
Yeah, which it's a bummer because the game is beautiful.
Yeah, it really is pretty. It's really well done. The dialogue is just mundane. The concept is interesting. It's just that it's just not interesting enough to hold it over on its own.
No.
But I give it props for not being insanely difficult to play. I give it extra bonus points for having a good control system, which a lot of these do not. And being able to play it easily. But I wish it was just a little more, I wish it had a little more pizzazz and just was like, you have to play this.
Yeah. Well, overall, $15. What do you think of it?
I'm still going to give it a try. I think major Metroidvania fans are going to just gobble it up. Especially if you liked Wonder Boy or other games like that. You're just going to be like, give me more! But as a game that's in a very saturated niche, it was just a little underwhelming. If that makes sense. Not like, yeah. This is so horrible. It was just like, give me a little something to make me love you.
Yeah. It's good. It's just not a must have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really how I feel about it.
Well, I'm in the eat it up camp, so I'm excited.
I'm sure. The whole time I was playing it, I was like, Joe's going to be mad that I don't absolutely love this. Because and it's not bad. It's just
not remarkable.
Just another one.
Oh well, next game to talk about is called The Padre, developed by Shotgun with Glitters, published by Feardemic, released June 27th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Unravel the mystery of a missing cardinal by solving the riddle of a demonic power you did not expect to come upon. Face your inner demons and fight the power of evil while it seduces your soul. Play as the wittiest pop culture referencing priest in video game history and face an ultimate game over if you make the angels cry you a river. Cole, tell us about The Padre.
Man, it's a week of good studio names.
It is.
So The Padre is a puzzle horror game with a voxel art style, which is very odd. It's definitely a juxtaposition between the game type and the art style. Like, anytime I see voxel art, I think super cutesy, Riverbond, Minecraft, and I don't expect to see a gun-wielding priest who makes pop culture references and bad jokes as he's being chased around by Victorian zombies and mirror demons. It's fucking crazy, despite its super cutesy standard art style. Like, do not judge a book by its cover here, because it is a thing.
Yes.
The game plays incredibly well. I didn't have any complaints about the controls or anything. The puzzles are not exactly what I would say super easy to understand or figure out. Sometimes the solution can be a little unconventional because the game is so odd and you're dealing with a demon hunter priest who may not have the correct tools for the job. I don't want to give a spoiler. I had to cut my words there for a second. But it means that the player has some puzzles and positions in this giant ass mansion that are unconventional and might require you to think outside of the box. And it also means if you're bad, you're just going to get fucking stuck. You played as well, right, Joe?
Yes.
That bathroom with the blood tentacles.
That was interesting.
Stuck so fucking long. And it was one of those instances of, like, I'm stuck, but I know the solution, but I also don't know the solution because, again, with all of the other puzzles that you come across in this game, most often it's an unconventional kind of answer. And so I'm sitting there going, I'm pretty sure I know how to do this room, but everything you're trying didn't work, and it just keeps yelling at you and killing you over and over.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the angel tears. I got the brilliant idea. I tried to pour my angel tears down the drain to unclog it. Because I was looking for that unconventional answer. You can't unclog the drain with angel tears. You know what you can do with the angel tears? Die.
Yes.
Every time you die, your little bottle of angel tears gets a little higher. And if you actually fill that whole bottle up, rip.
Game over. Because you just
lost your safe. Like, epic. Like, there is no going back. This is the really real world. I just quoted The Crow on the show. But this is the really real world, and there ain't no coming back. The angel tears fill up, and your save is gone. You are doing it all over from scratch.
Yeah, that's rough.
This poses... Well, I don't want to necessarily say that the angel tear mechanic itself is a problem, because you can't find places to empty your bottle of tears. Not down the drain in the bathroom. Don't try it. It won't work. Just go ahead and solve that one for you. But there are ways to empty your bottle of tears. They're not exactly broadcasted for you. And because the game doesn't doesn't hold your hand in any kind of way. And so a lot of trial and error is involved. That bottle will fill up stupid quick.
It will, especially if you do stupid things like check out the board game.
Yeah. Check out the board game, which tells you, by the way, that it will kill your dumb ass.
Yes, it does.
But you also have to do it anyway because it's an achievement. So so you have to die and just suck up the angel tears for that one. But there's also a well that you can drink from, which promises you immortality at a cost. The cost is your angel tears. And I found out because I was like, oh, I'll get that achievement real quick. But I wasn't paying attention to the angel tear bottle. And I died.
Oh, no.
I did not get the achievement. I was one away from drinking I had to drink from the well one more time to get the achievement.
Oh, no.
And I lost my whole save.
No.
So this leads me to my one major complaint. And it's kind of hard to complain about it because it's when you tell me to review these games, you say, well, you know, review them for what they are. And like, this game was not procedurally generated. It isn't meant to be procedurally generated. You go into this mansion and the rooms are what they are. But when you die and your whole save gets wiped, you're forced into replaying those rooms.
Yeah.
And then you already know the solution. And so then it's just more frustration than an actual growing experience. Yeah, you don't die as much, and so your angel tear bottle fills up a little less frequently on the second run through, but at the same time, it also feels like you're being pushed through the motions because there's nothing different about it. Yeah. Usually when you see a game with some kind of permadeath feature, something changes in between the playthroughs. And that is my biggest complaint. I wish, given that the mansion is as large as it is, and as we learned in the interview, there are even extra rooms that are there in the game. They're just locked off and you can't access them, period.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been nice if they would have had the mansion change when you die. Because the basis for that to happen is there. But it just doesn't. And so then you're just being forced through the motion of, well, I gotta go give the zombie lady the baby doll again. And so that she doesn't eat my face before I can get a key. And you know? And it's just is excessively frustrating. That's it. And I talked about it on the interview that we had with the developers as well. But there are some incredibly creative stories, like the little side stories that are tucked away inside the game that you will pick up through different collectibles and from solving the puzzles. I don't want to give any spoilers beyond what I've already said in the interview, but I love the way that they have worked these extra stories into it.
Yeah.
I'm just mad about losing my saves.
Which is understandable. Yes,
that saves with an S because I did it again. It's so easy to do.
So proud of you.
I know.
$20. What's your verdict?
I give it a try. It's not going to apply. It's not going to appeal to everybody. Just on the nature of being a horror game. Just on the nature of being a puzzle game. Those are two pretty tough niches in the first place that don't particularly get a lot of love and tend to just appeal to a certain subset of players.
Yeah.
Me. So knowing that it's not something that everybody's going to be like, over. But if you're looking for something that fits into either of those niches and you're looking for something that's a little different and really creative, then I definitely say give it a go.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is The Lost Legends of Redwall the Scout, developed and published by Soma Games. It released June 28th on Xbox One for $14.99. Whimsical adventure game based on the best-selling Redwall books. Set in the winter-shrouded wilderness between Lilygrove and Redwall Abbey, help Liam or Sophia race for help from the raiding rats under Scum Snout's command. Dark Mika checked this one out, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. The Lost Legends of Redwall the Scout is the first installment of a planned six-part game series. It's a third-person stealth game where you play as a mouse. You get to choose between a boy and a girl mouse. I forget their names. That's helpful, Dark Mika. The game is based on the lore and universe of a series of books and later a cartoon called Redwall by the late Brian Jacques. It's about medieval times, but with anthropomorphic animals instead of people. It mostly focuses on the adventures of the people that eventually helped make the Redwall Abbey, as well as those who inhabit the Redwall Abbey afterwards. The games will all be focused on stories from before the book started, so before Redwall Abbey was even a thought. The TV show was my introduction to the series as an older kid / young teen. I fell in love with it back then, and I got a bunch of the books, so I'm a little bit, just a little bit, of a Redwallophile. Oh, God.
Regardless, but then you couldn't remember their names.
Well, because they're not part of the universe. They're for the, they're unique to the game.
I'm questioning her red wall of file-ish.
Well, that's Liam and Sophia.
Proper word for that. Okay.
Liam
Mika and Sophia. Didn't know that though. Yeah. Fake fan.
Regardless of anything I say later in this review, I'm honestly just glad a game exists for this series. Also, for anyone who wonders, Ghost of a Tale was inspired by the Redwall series, and the game was in the works before Ghost of a Tale. It just came out much later because Jacques didn't want a game made at first, so they had to work with him until they got his approval. Okay, finally into the meat of the review. The story very much felt like a Redwall story, and they spoke very much the same way as the cartoon had them speak. I love that aspect of the game, and it shows that they cared about being in the universe properly. Sadly, though, it's short, and it very much leaves off on a cliffhanger, since again, it's only part one of six, which drives me a bit nuts. The stealth itself is fairly basic. Hide behind things, hide in bushes, don't run when close to the enemies, etc. Super basic, but I don't hate that. Some people do, I don't. That doesn't bother me at all. The problems, though, are kind of immediate, and sadly, there's a lot of them, at least on the Xbox version of the game that I played. The characters controlled fairly poorly. It wasn't so bad I didn't get used to it, but even when used to it, it still made me cuss out of anger a number of times. There's a lot of little graphical glitches which kind of surprised me. You'd climb up something, and sometimes your character would be climbing on air or a character or two higher than the ground you were supposed to climb up onto. Other times, the character would go into the wall while climbing up. I ran into a section where I just ran completely through a tree. So that's Yikes. Fun. Yeah. What's worse is it wasn't even dependent on which wall you tried to climb. Like, wall A wasn't one you glitched into, and B wasn't one you always climbed well above. Every wall did it, and sometimes you'd climb it just like normal. I don't even know what would cause that. The graphics are also somewhat bad. I think they just need to patch it, though, because from the screenshots of the PC version I've had, it has proper shading and such, and the Xbox doesn't seem to have that for some reason. I can agree. It looked like the textures looked off for some reason. I don't know if it's the console port or if it's just a glitch or something, but I did notice the game looked kind of off, though. I got constantly caught on the edges of table shelves and other such clutter. Enemies have a vision cone. Well, it's called a cone. It's not a cone. Cones end at some point. It felt like even if I was on the other side of the map and they looked in my direction and there was nothing blocking their sight, they would see me, even though it all takes place at night and they have torches, which indicates they shouldn't see that far past the light. That is not fun in a stealth game. For $15 on Steam, Xbox One, and PS4, I find it hard to recommend outside of a sale. I love the story, I like the characters, their interactions with each other and other characters, and all the lore the game has in it. However, it needs so much more polish from needing better graphics, working on controls, working on the geometry of the items in the game so you don't get caught on them when you climb properly. It needs a lot of work, but I love the story. I think it's worth having if you like Redwall. Otherwise, I don't know if this game is going to grab you. It might just piss you off. As a story, the game is great. As a game, though, it falls extremely short, so I say pass unless you really like Redwall. I'll continue to play these because I love Redwall, and I suggest the books or cartoons for everyone. If they update the game, I think it could turn into a try-it, and that makes me sad because I really wanted to love this, rate it highly, and suggest it to everyone and everything. But then I played it, and all the issues I had, it's just sad because as a story, it works so well, but it fails due to gameplay issues. Mm. That is a bummer. Yeah, I was excited for that one as well. I'm not as familiar with the source material as Dark Mika, but it's cute, it looked enjoyable, and it just felt rough. I think if they work on polishing the sequels a bit more, it could turn into something really special, though.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
I hope that it gets improved just so you guys can be happier about it.
Yeah. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Furwind, developed by Boomfire, published by Jandusoft. There's another good company name for you, huh? Released July.
They're also good this week.
They are. Released July 25th on Xbox One for $9.99, previously released on Switch and PS4 and Vita. Furwind is a colorful pixel art style action platformer game that evokes the challenging classics of the old days. Embark on this epic adventure in which a little fox will fight the ominous darkness that is invading its world. Cole, tell us about Furwind.
This game is stinking adorable and also very pretty. I can be really hard on pixel art games. As we heard when I switched Lost Orbit over to Indiecade mode, pixel art and I are not friends. But this one, there was just something about Ferwin that I was like, everything about this is adorable. Even the pixel art. You do play as a little fox named Ferwin. Again, you have a very standard issue Metroidvania type of plot where you've got to go and collect these elementals to save your to save the village. I wish again that it was a little more involved than that as far as the story goes. But for the sake of Ferwin over, say, Agalos, Ferwin's gameplay does carry it more. As the little fox, you have the ability to jump and double jump initially, and also to, I'm losing my train of thought so bad right now.
Proud of you.
Oh, I'm so tired. But you also have the ability to attack using your tail, which is just the most stinking adorable attack I've ever seen. He just little spins and just bitch slaps people with his tail.
Yeah.
It's so cute. So as you play through the game, you start off with a hub world, if you will, kind of not quite as static as a map, but you start off with the hub and you can select the levels that you want to play through. The biggest issue with Ferwin, while everything, the level design is absolutely incredible, first and foremost. Let me get that out of the way. The levels are gorgeous. They are also a little on the cookie cutter side between each of the different acts. The game has three acts, and each hub screen for the act has the village in the middle where you can go in and talk with your mentor or go to the shop, and then you choose your levels or your challenges from that map. The levels will have you trying to take out two guardians in order to get medallion pieces. Once you've got the two pieces of the medallion, you can activate a portal and leave the level. But you have to go through they're not quite bosses, they're more like mini bosses with each one. But you take out a mini boss, get their half of the medallion, go find the other one. While you do that, you can also explore the level. There are challenge scrolls hidden in each level. There's two of them. And if you have those when you leave the level, then you unlock two additional challenges on your hub. My train of thought is so shot tonight. Sorry.
It's fine.
Initially with the first boss, the difficulty was kind of shockingly high. It took a lot to figure out their pattern and to figure out what was going on and how to get around them. I was genuinely surprised that the second wave of bosses in the second chapter and the third were easier than the first one. Like, I died so many times trying to get past the first level and those two mini bosses just to get the medallions. And then the second one's like, stand in one spot and hit them with my tail 20 times. And I was genuinely shocked. I don't understand why that difficulty was, why it was so much more difficult in the beginning. Even like, you could say, oh, well, you've learned the controls and you know what you're doing a little more, but it was just the boss pattern itself was so much easier in the second half and third half of the game than it was in the first. Third half. I told you I'm shot. My meds have kicked in and my brain is just like mush. I had to take a painkiller before we started this, and that's where I'm at. Nice.
So you're feeling good.
I apologize. I'm not feeling good. I feel fuzzy and like my eyes are making grinding noises.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. Didn't expect it to kick in that fast. But like I said, the levels become a little cookie cutterish. So each different act has a series of level types. There is a tower level with lava and a puzzle that you'll have to overcome to get the medallions, as opposed to an actual combat sequence. Whereas then the other main level that you're going to play has the combat sequences, and you'll have to explore and find your scrolls and everything. And then there are the challenges where you merely just have to like navigate and find an orb. Then the last game type, like it's like kind of like meant to be a mini game, but you will have an individual screen and it will just have a dozen of one type of enemy, and you have to kill all the enemies in order to release a prisoner. That's all well and good, but the moment you go from Act 1 to Act 2, it just feels like you're replaying Act 1 with a different skin.
No, that doesn't really change it up much.
I mean, the levels themselves are laid out differently, but it's the exact same concept. It's the exact same level types. Like, the challenges don't change. It's just, go find that orb. They do switch up a little bit in that you unlock some different abilities as you go through the different areas and you collect the elements. Eventually you learn to fly. For example, fly is kind of loosely used here because you can dash for a long distance more than actually fly. You just don't fall if there's a canyon under you. You can't just like have your fox like pick up and fly like Tails from Sonic. That's not what they mean with fly. I was a little let down there. I was hoping for some Sonic Tails flying going on. You'll get additional ones. You can unlock an ability to let you guarantee a health drop from the next boss you kill, for example, or things like that. Which does shake things up, but it would be nice if there were variations in the level types. Like, say, okay, if you do the lava tower, the way that those are beaten is that they have puzzles that are kind of like the Simon game, right?
Yeah.
But if you beat it in Act 1 and you go to the lava tower in Act 2 when you unlock it, it's just another tower where you're trying to get to the Simon game, rather than having a different type of puzzle there for you to solve to get your medallions. So by the time you've done 6 of those, you're really tired of the Simon game. That said, as much as I wish that like there was some more shakeup to the gameplay mechanics, I super enjoyed what was there. And I would have to say, of all the games I've played this week, I spent the most time on Furwind.
Nice.
And I had the most fun with it. So it was, surprise, spoiler alert, it was my favorite of the week.
Well, then $10 on it. What's your verdict?
At $10, even though it feels a little cookie cutterish here and there, at $10, I can forgive it and say it's a buy it.
Awesome. I'm going to have to pick this one up myself.
Because I did love this one.
I thought this one looked adorable, and I've been dying to get my hands on it, so I'm going to have to pick this up next week.
Yeah, I felt a little bad. Because again, I had Agalos and I had Furwind, and I've been playing both of them, and it's like every time I was playing Agalos, I just wanted to be playing more Furwind because I just enjoyed it that much more.
Hey, that's good that you enjoyed the game.
Yeah, I have every intention of completing it this weekend.
Nice. I am envious.
Yay.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Nightcall, developed by Monkey Moon and Black Muffin, two more great studio names, published by Raw Fury, released July 17th on Steam and Windows 10 for $19.99, also available as part of the Xbox Game Pass for PC. Friend, confident, therapist, voyeur. As a cab driver working the Paris night shift, you are many things to different people. Your gift is getting people to talk, and in order to catch the serial killer who left you for dead, that's exactly what you'll need to do. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. Nightcall is a dystopian cops are asshole genre of game that has you, an innocent person, get forced to do shit for cops because they're morons, and why not attempt to get an innocent civilian killed doing your shitty job? Yay. It's also a mix of those odd basic narrative games like Papers, Please, and even a little bit of a visual novel. You play as a Parisian taxi driver. One night you and your passenger are fucked up by a serial killer you just barely managed to live. Because you survived your seemingly Middle East and your seemingly Middle Eastern with a name similar to that of a bomber that's on trial in the city at the time, the cop lady decides that, well, she could throw your name out there so people would attack you for being a terrorist, because, you know, that's how cops operate or something, right? I don't like that story type. It annoys me. The game is mostly just you talking with people who are in your taxi. Since the preview, they've added a fuck ton of more characters to it, and most of the interactions are really good. There's three or four choices during conversations, including effectively cutting people off in the middle of the conversation, and each choice changes not just the conversation, but also how the person reacts to you in that conversation, and later on if you meet with them again. The reactions can change how they talk to you, if you get any tips, as well as how much of a tip you get, or even if you get information to use in other parts of the game. The other parts of the game is trying to solve the murders. There's actually three different campaigns, and each one deals with a different serial killer, and they get more and more complex. At your home after getting home from work / before heading out to work, you can read notes and files that you get to learn about the serial killer to try and figure out who they are from a pool of suspects that you have. After reading the files and some notes, you can look up to a cork board which has every piece of important information on it. Some information only involves some of the pool, others cover all of them, and just because it's important enough to be shown doesn't mean it's important to the case at hand. It's not just about, okay, this person hits a bunch of pieces of evidence, it's more about this evidence is super good and important and it points to this person. Quality over quantity, which is nice, and it makes you think, and people don't think enough these days. Also, just because you're pretty sure person A is the baddie doesn't mean they actually are, which to me adds another layer to the game. For $20, it has a ton of replay value as you can meet different people while driving the taxi, and you can come up with different pieces of evidence in return. Plus, there's various modes and difficulties to play for custom challenge. If you like noir style adventure visual novels or dystopian Papers, Please S games, then I think you'll love this one. Everyone else, I think it's a solid try it.
Nice. I'm looking forward. I want to play Nightcall. It's on PC Game Pass.
Yeah, it is. So if you have Game Pass Ultimate or PC Game Pass, you can play Nightcall.
Yay!
Hooray! All right, final game to talk about tonight is a preview of Away, the survival series developed and published by Breaking Walls. It's releasing sometime in 2020 for Steam and PS4. Inspired by nature documentaries, Away, the survival series takes you on the sugar glider's breathtaking journey into the wild. As cataclysmic storms bear down on the planet, immerse yourself in nature and explore a vibrant world brimming with life, but beware of the dangers that lie ahead. Cole, tell us about Away.
So Away, the code that we received was limited to just being a gliding prototype. The overall game is supposed to be a survival experience. Like you said, mentioned in the summary, it's based on, you know, your classic Discovery Channel nature documentary, right down to the narrator's voice telling you everything that's going to happen. But for the preview that we were given of the game, we were only able to test out the glide controls for the sugar glider. So first and foremost, everything is absolutely gorgeous in this game. If the game comes out at launch looking a fraction as pretty as this preview, then it's a buy it just on looks alone.
See, that's why I'm telling them that they need to look into getting this game on the Xbox, because I would love to see it on the right. X.
So I will say I was playing it on David's laptop, and I was playing it with ultra high settings, and just the environment alone, like every leaf just stood out, and you just wanted to deviate away from the path that it had set for you to fly and just sit there and look. Like, there were moments where I wouldn't take the leap to start the glide because I was just sitting and staring at the mountain range in the distance and just taking in all the detail that was there. It's absolutely incredible. Just, their words don't do it justice. It looks like they took a camera to this jungle setting and just panned around and then put the sugar glider in there. I will say, even the sugar glider's model, just, it looks picture perfect. It's mind blowing. Boy, how far we've come from those pixel blood and guts on the Nintendo.
Yeah.
Control wise, it controlled incredibly well. I was playing it with a controller. I didn't try to use the keyboard. My hands just, they don't do that shit. So I did play it with a controller. It was incredibly smooth and responsive. The prototype just basically lets you follow the path of the sugar glider trying to get a hold of its prey, which was a dragonfly. So there's a yellow line for the path of the dragonfly, and then there are certain checkpoints that you can hit with the sugar glider that will give you a little boost so that you pick back up speed stuff going after the dragonfly. It was so surreal to play something like that. The way that it controlled was perfect, although I was clearly very bad at it because I just kept hitting fucking everything. But I was also so incredibly proud of myself because I managed at one time, I realized I was about to slam into a tree and I dodged it, which is the only other control you have when you're flying. You can, you know, go up and down, or you can dodge left or right real quick using the bumpers. And I dodged it and it popped up an achievement. I was like, the game is proud of me. I'm a real sugar glider. And I felt so good about myself for no good reason. Because at that point, I'd already crashed like 74 times.
Oh, Jesus.
I should have known to dodge that tree by that point. I'd have been more concerned if I didn't. But as far as the preview goes, this I just want so much more of this game just from playing what I got to play of it. There was a link to back it on Kickstarter. I have saved it. I will be stalking it because I want more of a way.
And fingers crossed again that they
please bring it to Xbox too. Yes. Though, because
they said they're open to it. So
I will say I tried to play it as well on my desktop, which has an i5, which I knew was below the settings that they had recommended for it anyway. And it did play, but I did have to lower the settings, and it was a little more on the choppy side. But playing it on my husband's i7 laptop was just, it was smooth sailing. So it was incredible.
Nice. So definitely something to keep our eyes on, huh?
Yeah. Give me more.
All right. Good stuff. Well, that is it for this episode. Just around the 2-hour mark. Not bad.
Nice. We did well.
I'm happy. It was a good chat. Thanks again to Alex for coming on and chatting with us. That was a fun chat. Lost Orbit, really cool game. Go pick that up. It's only $10.
Yes.
Reviews are good. Yes. Furwind was your pick of the week.
Furwind is the pick of the week. Although, well, see, I couldn't pick Lost Orbit because we didn't do the review on it yet.
Yeah, that's so going to be next episode.
You'll have to wait and see if it wins pick of the week next time. But
well, if you're doing it for the weekend show, you'll only have the one. So it would be your pick by default.
Do I not have others next week?
I said if you're doing it for the weekend.
Oh, am I doing it for the weekend
show? For the Wednesday show.
Am I?
I don't know. We could.
Oh.
I don't know.
Then it can be the pick of the week.
Yeah, let's discuss this. Let's discuss this on the show. Fuck it. Why not, right? That is it for this episode. This is 498 in the books. Next Thursday when we do our live show, it will be episode 500. I'm excited. It is really, really... I can't believe we're going to be at 500. That is insane.
I just... Jesus H. Christ.
Is those your final words for the episode, Jesus H. Christ?
Yes.